This is Public Pulse, your information and conversation program, brought to you by First Federal Bank and Trust. You can voice your opinion by calling 672-KROE. That's 672-5763. Now, your host for Public Pulse, Floyd Whiting.
Good morning and welcome to Public Pulse. I am joined this morning by primary care physician at Sheridan Memorial Hospital's primary care, Dr. Emily Denny, and Sheridan Memorial Hospital's Women's Health Unit registered nurse, Jazz Scott. Good morning, ladies, and welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, Dr. Denny, welcome back. You and I have spoken in the past, I believe, right after you got here, correct?
Correct. Pretty shortly after I got here.
How have things been going?
It's been great. I love the primary care clinic.
Now, can you tell us just a little bit about yourself and your background?
I did my medical school in Texas. That's where I grew up. Went to residency in Maine. Did some time in the Air Force. Was on the East Coast. When that time was done, I wanted to get back to rural healthcare and ended up in Western Montana for 5.5 years doing pretty much full spectrum family medicine other than OB, no OB, but inpatient pediatrics, inpatient adults, newborn care, nursing homes, the whole kit and caboodle, and then needed a change of scenery and ended up in wonderful Sheridan. Now, I love it here.
What did you do in the Air Force?
Outpatient primary care.
Outpatient primary.
Mm-hmm.
did you? So I rarely went to sick call myself. Mm-hmm. Did you see a lot of, I guess you could say, airmen come through there with boo-boos? And?
Oh, yeah.
You said you were on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. What part?
I was in Delaware. I was in Dover Air Force Base.
When it comes to pilots, mm-hmm. did you work closely with them? There's a lot of health requirements.
There's a lot of health requirements. So there's actually a whole flight medicine team that gets additional training for the pilots. So we can take care of everybody pretty much but the pilots and like the air traffic controlmen and stuff. So
they have to undergo, I don't know how many different physical checks all the time, right?
Oh my gosh. The rules and regs for a pilot is a whole other level of...
Oh, yeah. So if you want to be a pilot, make sure that you are staying physical fit. Because boy, that's... Now, when it came to choosing medicine as a career field, mm-hmm. what led you in that direction?
I was actually thinking about research, and then I realized I enjoyed my interactions with people more. I enjoyed those conversations, those relationship building, seeing people make healthy changes. And then I realized when I got into medical school that I just really loved taking care of families. And seeing those dynamics and seeing how you could help a whole family.
When you were looking at research, what were you thinking about going into?
I was in biochemistry.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
Wow, that's not an easy field. What was it about that really kind of drew you that way for a little while?
I got into it through some programs in high school, and I kept going back every summer and, you know, kind of working with the same lab, and it was just really, it was interesting.
Yeah.
Making a hypothesis and then following it through and seeing where it led.
Absolutely. Was there any specialized field that you were thinking about, blood or anything like that?
The research we were doing at the time was actually kind of at the level of the kidney, but it was interesting, but it didn't have my heart.
So. Yeah. People did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And now that you've got some road underneath you, still loving it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's good days, there's bad days, but, you know, those days when you've helped someone make a change or done something to help them figure out the next steps, those are the best moments. So.
And with primary care,
mm-hmm.
I mean, this is our cradle to the grave type of mm-hmm. Care, isn't it? So mm-hmm. you're really helping everyone.
That's the hope, yeah.
Everybody.
Yeah.
What is that like, not having that specialty?
Some days are really challenging because you never know what you're going to have go through your door. You'll have a 90-year-old with their chronic medical conditions, and then you could have a 2-year-old,
yeah,
with a cold. So who knows?
Does that keep it a little more adventurous, though, at the same time?
Yeah, it's definitely dynamic. But, you know, like I said, those relationships, when you can, you know, the whole family, you know, the parents, you know, what's going on, you know, you can really sometimes really support a family through difficult times.
And that's really a goal, isn't it? I mean, everyone's kind of seeking that nowadays. We have our specialists, which is absolutely fantastic. But even from my point of view, having that one doctor that I can go to and basically say anything. And not only are they invested in me as a person, but my care to the utmost of their ability. You know, you really put a lot of trust in your doctor.
People do. Yes, they do. And so you want to be that support for them. And it can be very challenging.
So. And there's an emotional part to this as well.
Absolutely.
Because you're invested in those families.
You can, yeah. Yeah.
Where, and I'm not trying to talk out of school here, but a specialist might know my kidney, might know my lungs, but they might not know me.
Right.
Or my kids. Yeah. So there is.
You know, and, you know, part of it is just time. Like, you know, it just takes time to get to know families. It may take years, but it can really, as you are there, you really start to put things together and build those relationships.
Now, and that's really why you chose primary care, isn't it? This is the goal to develop that. Now, Mrs. Scott, in September of last year, you were honored after earning the 2023 Norman S. Holt Award for Nursing Excellence. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Now, what does this award mean for you?
Quite honestly, it was very unexpected. It is just a prestigious award given to a nurse within the state of Wyoming that just speaks to the fact that I represent the nursing profession at its highest standards and all that nurses and the nursing profession stands for. So I'm very honored to have received it. It was very unexpected, as I said, but I wear the badge with pride, and I like to kind of exemplify that at the unit that I work on at the hospital. So,
and nobody told you were getting this?
No. I mean, I had a little bit of, I was asked to make myself available for certain periods of time.
You might want to be here at this particular time.
Yes,
right?
It was like, you do need to be here. And I had a little bit of a inclination when, as the time came closer, to make my way down to Cheyenne and receive the award. So
what did that feel like when they called your name?
I'm a person who doesn't like the spotlight, surprisingly. And so it was just mixed emotions, of course, very overwhelming. I wasn't prepared to give a speech, but I gave a little bit of an impromptu speech. Very short, very brief, sweet, and to the point. But it was a lot. I had a standing ovation from a large group of people from the state of Wyoming. And that in of itself is just very gratifying, you know, to be recognized for the hard work that you do.
And a bit of validation.
And validation, yeah.
All that hard work.
Yeah.
Now, congratulations
again.
Thank you. That's fantastic.
Thanks.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Hudson, Wyoming, but most people know where Lander, Riverton, Wyoming are, so kind of smack dab between the two. Graduated from Lander Valley High School in Lander. I grew up on a little small hobby farm, kind of had every little sweet piece of Wyoming in my life growing up, the mountains, fishing, hunting, critters, you name it.
So you guys had a little bit of everything. That's kind of how my upbringing was.
Yeah.
My parents had just
Wyoming roots. Yeah.
A couple lambs, a few cattle,
enough to keep you busy and some chores for the summertime when you're out of school, you know, so, yeah.
I figured out pretty young which lambs ate the fastest so I could get out of there. And those were the ones that I would jump into.
Sure.
What directed you to nursing?
That's a question that most nurses are always asked, and it's one of the questions that I feel like it's not the hardest for me to answer, but I feel like I was just born that way. I was born and always wanted to go into the healthcare field. As a nurse, obviously, you know, our goal is to care for others. And I've always had that giving piece of me that has wanted to particularly be there for individuals and people kind of at their most vulnerable times in life.
Yeah.
You know, death, life, you name it. And I just felt like it's always just, it was just what I was destined to be.
And I mean, it can be a tough job at times.
Sure. You know? Yeah. Definitely.
Getting to know these folks around here and kind of standing with them at their worst moment.
Definitely.
Is there any training nurses are given for that portion of the job? Or is that something that they just kind of say, you know, you got it or you don't?
I think as nurses or healthcare professionals in general, and Dr. Denny can speak to this, I think you are lifelong learners and very adaptable. And there's always resources out there for nurses and healthcare professionals to seek in regards to the things that we need and the resources that we need. But as far as particular training, yes and no. I mean, I could speak to the fact of, you know, when we deal with bereavement of a lost newborn, I am very familiar with resources for myself and nurses that have to deal with things of that sort. Yeah, it's kind of whatever. I think you're also born with a piece of that. And as a nurse, you are, you recognize that piece of yourself and the ability to deal with the emotions and the ups and downs, the ebbs and flows of the profession. So a lot of it is leaning on your coworkers and other nurses. So
I always thought it took really gifted individuals to be there for some of my happiest moments and some of my saddest moments as well. Doc, do they give doctors any kind of training on giving bad news or anything like that?
We do get training on, you know, delivering end-of-life news and sudden loss. There's always a little bit of training, but there's also just part of it. It's just you have to experience and be a part of it and, you know, go, you know, you're...
There's never a good way to get bad
There's
news.
No way. Yeah. And, you know, and emotionally, as a nurse or as a physician or provider or a nurse practitioner, like when you're giving, you're living that experience with that person, like you're
just human with them.
Yeah. That's fantastic. What a great statement. You know, the titles and the training kind of go off to the side and you just stand there and be human with me. Yeah. That's great. So real quick, I've got to take a commercial break, but before I go off there, Mrs. Scott, why women's health? You know, as a nurse, you can go in just about any direction. Yeah.
That's the beauty of nursing and healthcare. You have so many avenues you can go down. Again, since I've graduated, I've always worked with moms and babies. I'm kind of a diehard. That's what I started doing. That's what I'll end doing. It has my heart in so many different ways, from babies in the NICU that I cared for right out of nursing school down to postpartum moms learning to breastfeed and care for their brand new newborn for the first time. It has such, it's always changing, it's always evolving, and there will always be moms and babies in our world that need the help that I get to provide while being there for them on the inpatient women's health unit. So.
It was a great foundation, but we've come a long way since Dr. Spock, right? We've learned a thing or two since that time. All right.
For sure.
More with primary care physician Dr. Emily Denny and women's health nurse Jazz Scott. Right after this, you're listening to Public Pulse, 930 KROE, 103.8. Welcome back to Public Pulse. I'm Floyd Whiting. I wanted to put forth a bit of a listener's discretion. I'm speaking with medical professionals regarding pregnancy and care, and the issues of postpartum and baby blues may come up. Listener discretion is advised. This morning, I'm speaking with primary care physician at Sheridan Memorial's Hospital's primary care, Dr. Emily Denny, and Sheridan Memorial Hospital's Women's Health Unit registered nurse, Jazz Scott. Becoming a mother, this is a big step many women choose to take. Doc, as we jump into this, the changes that a woman's body goes through, I've got kids, you know, and I've got a lot of siblings and I've been there for a lot of pregnancies. was in the room for the birth of my daughter, but I can never understand as a man what's going on in the body and the mind of a mother. Mm-hmm. What's the initial beginnings of life?
That's a loaded question.
Right? A bit.
And just to be clear, I'm not an obstetrician, but you know, a woman's body goes through so many hormonal changes. You have so many new hormones changing the body, loosening ligaments, changing your hormone status to those love hormones. And you know, the body's just, you almost feel like, as a mother myself of two, like you almost feel a little bit like a different person as you have this child growing inside of you. And then, you know, and then you come to this postpartum period, which can be just, you know, is fraught with new experiences. You know, the birth experience, which may go exactly the way you want it, to the exact opposite of how you ever imagined it, to, you know, this new life that, you know, is it a healthy newborn? Is it an unhealthy newborn? Which can have its own significant stresses. Do you have support at home? Do you not have support at home? You know, the whole process can be, you know, magical, but completely overwhelming.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then, yeah, on top of the physical changes, the hormonal changes, if you don't have a good foundation to fall back on, I mean, that can be devastating. Ms. Scott, how often are you the one standing with the mother alone?
You know, we're lucky that here in Sheridan, I think most of the mothers and families that we see have quite a good support group, but there are those individuals who may not. And so that is part of our role, is to be both the nurse, the friend, you know, the confidant, the whatever that individual, that mom needs at that point in time during her labor and delivery experience. And so, yeah, I've been with a mom by herself in the room, learning to take care of her brand new baby on her own for the first time, you know, and walking them through everything from a diaper change to how to hold a baby, what to expect on the first night, second night, third night. So, yeah, a range of jobs, hats, if you will call them, that we do when we're nurses. So,
My first wife and I had our daughter, and she was pretty nervous because I think she changed one diaper that whole time. She wasn't a babysitter growing up or anything like that. And I saw a switch get flipped. She went from someone who felt like she couldn't do it, not a lot of confidence, to just super mom overnight. It was absolutely amazing. How often do you see that?
Every day. I mean, I kind of liken it to, it's just a seismic identity shift for a woman when they become a mom. It's an entirely different identity. You know, even if it's a mom who thought that they wanted to be a mother or have children all their life and they knew what they would expect afterwards, I still don't think any woman or mother quite knows what their identity changes to when they bring a newborn into the world.
Doc, what are some of the things that you go over with your expecting mothers, your patients?
You know, again, I'm not an obstetrician, but, you know, when I do see, you know, pregnant mothers, you know, we're talking about, you know, what kind of supports they have at home, you know, what do they need? That's a difficult question.
What about care, multivitamins, things like that?
You know, making sure they have some support so that they can get rest when they need it. You know, making sure that they're eating, you know, taking care of themselves. And so that's where some of these resources here in Sheridan can just be super helpful. And so we kind of go into those now. So.
You know, when it comes to after I've had the baby, and I may not know the next step. What are some of the things that I can do if I just don't know where to go or what to do?
So that's where, like, the hospital is wonderful. They have prenatal classes. The, you know, the OB department is wonderful in promoting those. We've got Jazz here who helps with teaching breastfeeding and all the newborn care supports. You know, that's where the pediatrician and helping getting, you know, your pediatrician or your family practice provider who can help you take care of that newborn and get you resources that way. You know, we have, you know, there's a million resources. The public health has a wonderful resource. There's a child development center.
WIC.
And when you're going through these emotional changes, what are some of the things that you've seen a mother, I don't know how to phrase this, think or behave? I mean, sometimes it seems like I talked about that flip being switched.
You know, and so to talk about that, you know, within the first 2 weeks, baby blues is incredibly common as a hormonal switch. I think it's just the release of new hormones as that baby's delivered, the change in the hormones from no longer having that, you know, that baby inside of you. And that happens within just a couple of days. And, you know, 50 to 80% of moms will experience those mood changes.
Very abrupt.
It's very abrupt. You know, it's not usually horrible. It's just some tearful and emotional kind of feeling of sadness and change. And then that should level off within a couple of weeks. But then you end up possibly with some moms who have postpartum depression. And that's, you know, more significant. These feelings of, you know, loneliness, isolation, excessive sadness. And that could be 1 in 7 or 1 in 10 moms experience that.
Wow.
And that's 600,000 women a year that could experience that in the United States.
Is this just the body flushing out hormones? Or, I mean, what is going on physically? Or so, do we even know?
When I talk with moms about, like, postpartum blues, and again, you know, I speak from a nurse's standpoint. I just kind of tell moms within the first couple weeks, kind of anything goes. You can cry at the Cheerios commercial 1 minute, and the next minute you're really upset or angry with something. And then overwhelming joy, you know, 3 minutes later. It's kind of just like an ebb and flow of emotions that is really just related to hormonal shifts postpartum after the placenta and baby are delivered. And then, you know, after a couple weeks, once that has come and gone, if it becomes more of a norm, it's more of, you know, just the hormones that have caused that quite haven't adjusted appropriately. And then it becomes more of a postpartum depression, concern, anxiety. And then it can go down all sorts of avenues for moms, depending on who you are and your situations at home, your support, how things are going, transitioning to the role of a mother.
But this is completely normal.
Absolutely. We want to talk about postpartum blues, postpartum depression, very openly, candidly. It's nothing to be at all ashamed of, afraid of. It is very normal.
How often do you hear moms say, "I felt like this too long. I don't like having these feelings," and then they seek something out?
I see it pretty frequently, and the conversation has become so much more open, but there's so many women that I see that still don't feel like it should be happening to them, and they still feel very, very alone and isolated.
You pull that mic just a little closer. No, you're good. Now, that sounds very similar to things that I've heard in the past, you know, and everyone wants to feel like, well, that I'm stronger than this. I can face this and conquer this mountain on my own. But then we get into a situation, and I know a lot of people from both genders can say, I know this. I know this feeling. You hit that wall. You don't know what to do. You can't get rid of these emotions. Jazz, what can someone do?
I think the biggest thing is to, and not everyone does recognize it as a wall. You know, sometimes it can kind of creep in. And it's unexpected. You can have the perfect labor and delivery experience and the most beautiful baby in front of you and still be overwhelmingly depressed, anxious, whatever it is. You can have had a birth experience that totally went awry, and you may not be affected at all by postpartum depression, blues, psychosis. But the biggest thing that we ask moms and families and their support groups to do is to talk about it, recognize it, and not be afraid to seek out help, resources. Even if it's speaking with another mom, going to a support group, another woman who may have experienced same or similar things, to making an appointment immediately at the primary care clinic or the women's health clinic, just to not shy away from recognizing that you're not doing well. And we're lucky in Sheridan to have a lot of resources to go after. And so choose one and start there.
And it's always so difficult to come forward with this kind of stuff.
Sure.
I mean, I'm often having the conversation with individuals from the VA and mental health groups, and people have a tougher time discussing emotional setbacks than they do physical setbacks.
Mm-hmm.
But one plays on the other.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Doesn't it, Doc? Now, I'm going to take a quick commercial break. But when it comes to where I would go to seek help, mm-hmm. At Sheridan Memorial Hospital for postpartum or baby blues, mm-hmm. is there an office I can walk into? And
I mean, there's any number of resources. There's the women's health clinic. There's the primary care clinic.
Pediatricians. The pediatricians are very well versed in it as
are
well.
Super well versed in it. I mean, honestly, at the early well child visits, the pediatricians are frequently doing a postpartum
Correct.
Depression evaluation. So we're trying to catch it in as many avenues as we can. So.
All right. Okay. More with our primary care physician, Dr. Emily Denny, and women's health nurse, Jazz Scott, right after this. Physician at Sheridan Memorial Hospital's primary care, Dr. Emily Denny, and Sheridan Memorial Hospital's Women's Health Unit registered nurse, Jazz Scott. Now, Mrs. Scott, as a nurse in the Women's Health Unit, what would you say are the most common challenges that you see moms coping with in the first just few hours of having a baby?
Well, I think it's a range of things depending on where you are at. Are you a first-time mom who's never held a baby before? Or is this your fifth, sixth child? And, you know, you're kind of on cruise control. But often the most common difficulties are just that of making sure that you are meeting the needs of your newborn. And so as a mom, a mother, you want to make sure that that newborn has everything that they need, that they want, and that you are giving that to them. And so oftentimes some of the struggles break down to feeding, whether it be breastfeeding, bottle feeding, down to how do I care for my postpartum body? What changes are normal? What can I expect, not expect? Yeah, all of the emotional and physical changes that happen after the delivery of a newborn.
Now, you talked about you've seen moms, first-time moms, many, many times. Have you seen those moms with six kids? They're coming in basically pushing the OB out of the way. Get out of my way. Let me do it. I know what's happening here.
You know, those are the ones where as nurses, they come in. If they're ready to deliver a baby, the bedside nurses are, you know, they're in good company because these moms have done it before, you know. But yes and no, you know, you'd be surprised how many moms after four or five kids or even two or three feel like it's a new experience all over again, too. Yeah. And they too need the reassurance, the guidance and the education that maybe they didn't get with their first kid, or maybe that, you know, after four kids, it's easy to forget things very quickly. It's an ever-changing role day to day, month by month for the mom and for the baby. So,
yeah, yeah. And nothing is ever the exact same, is it?
Correct.
Everything is different from now to then. Plus, we've got different technologies. I think my grandmother gave birth to only one of her six children in a hospital.
Yeah.
And that was my Aunt Grace, the last kid of the six. She finally decided, you know what, let's go see what this hospital hubbub is all about. Now, can you tell us a little bit about the breastfeeding and lactation services? Because I can remember we decided to breastfeed, and Katie, boy, right to it. Like, there was no problem. But my sister had a tougher time. The baby didn't want to participate.
Sure. So as an inpatient women's health nurse, I'm happy to say and proud to say that we work with a really great group of nurses. And one of the first things that we really want a mom to do is to kind of focus on what we call the golden hour to establish good breastfeeding. And that is just being alone, skin to skin with that brand new baby for the first 1 to 2 hours after delivery, you know, so long as both of you are healthy. And kind of that kind of kickstarts hopefully some good breastfeeding skills, techniques, and successes. as far as resources, we are very lucky, I would say, in Sheridan to have many that women can reach out to. It can start from, and we highly encourage moms, if you've never had a newborn before, to attend any sort of prenatal or birthing class, breastfeeding class, which Sheridan Memorial Hospital does offer. And so I have some cohorts who teach the labor and delivery side of the prenatal classes on the first Monday of every month at the hospital from 5:30 to 7:30. And then myself and my cohort, Danielle, we teach the breastfeeding, lactation, and newborn class on the third Monday of every month from the same time. And so you can find those classes and sign up for them on the hospital website, through the women's clinic. You can also just be, you can also just show up. And we encourage any mom to come, whether it's your first baby or not. If you're just a dad who wants to come, you know, and we do encourage moms to drag their husbands or significant others along, because they are an equal part in breastfeeding success. So.
Absolutely. And I was there the day that my daughter grew her first teeth, and that was the end. Man, we're finished. We're switching over. But you know, there's always some sort of difficulty. Maybe not always, but a lot of times there's some sort of difficulty because with my baby, she didn't want to take a false nipple, so it was really tough. Where do we go now? Because the breastfeeding had to come to an end.
Sure.
Those, you know, razor blades in there. Those things are dangerous. So we decided to just switch over to like a solid food. And it was pretty dang early. But boy, she took right to it. That doesn't always happen, though.
No, I think it depends on the baby. It's funny that we're discussing this because I just spoke with a mother yesterday about, you know, this is her second kid and she won't take a pacifier. And as much as she wishes that she would take a pacifier just so that she's not the pacifier, you know, you just kind of, as a mom, you kind of punt all the time, you know, try this, try that, reach out to this person, look at this resource. You often just go and try and find the things that you need. So whether it's a friend who maybe experienced it, or if you, you know, seek help from a medical professional such as Dr. Denny, yeah, you never know what newborns are going to do and as they age and what they're going to want and not want. And so some of those challenges, like artificial, what we call teats, or pacifiers, bottles, the switch to and from breastfeeding to bottle feeding, that's something that we discuss in the prenatal class as well as inpatient while you're establishing feeding. So,
Doc, do you see that quite a bit? Because she would never take a bottle. Like, once in a great while, mm-hmm. you know, if the poor kid was starving, then she'd jump on it. But other than that, we had to switch to a sippy cup very, very early. She just really didn't want to do it. You see it quite a bit?
You see different, you know, variations of that. And, you know, so you encourage just different behaviors. And that's where, you know, your pediatrician can be really helpful. Your obstetrician can be helpful. You know, sometimes it's having dad hold the bottle, you know, as one trick, because if mom holds baby,
baby knows.
So those are some of those just little tricks. You just keep trying and make that transition. And there's a variety of reasons that, you know, mom might have to switch to bottle feeding, or that might just be the right choice. So
now, what are some pro tips that you've learned in helping new moms and families navigate through these first few months of breastfeeding? My ex-wife, pumping was always a big thing. A lot of folks do that at the house. I think everybody does now, don't they?
You know, worldwide, we want to promote breastfeeding. We know that breast milk is the best for the baby. And so that's not to say that there's honorable options otherwise from breastfeeding and breast milk. There's plan B, C, and D for reasons, and that's nothing to be ashamed of. But as far as pro tips, it can be everything from, you know, we ideally want those babies to be skin to skin and engaging in the golden hour, to honestly spending as much time with the primary care providers, mom, dad, in the first few weeks, to establish good breastfeeding techniques and habits and skills. And so we often encourage moms to kind of keep visitors to a minimum, to take a lot of time to rest, and let the other individuals who want to provide help or give help to do so. So, you know, let your aunt do the dishes, let your husband take the dog for a walk. You sleep and then you turn around and you pump, you breastfeed. Whatever that feeding method looks like for that family. And it's individualized, of course. You know, there might be those moms who are able to breastfeed from, you know, or babies right out the gate until however long they want. And then there are those families who struggle to establish breastfeeding and good breastfeeding techniques or milk supply or good latches. And so those are the families that we want to come see us, to come reach out for help. To get the reassurance maybe that they need, because maybe that everything is going well, and to maybe get the help that they don't have if things aren't going well. Because our goal and my goal always is to support moms and families, ideally in how they want to feed their newborn.
Yeah.
So I let them guide me and try and give them the tools that they need for that feeding.
That can be an emotional burden as well.
Certainly.
You know, these moms who are going through these hormonal changes, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden the baby won't feed. Well, now there's this idea that, okay, well, I'm failing as a mother.
It's a stigma. Correct. Yeah. Yes, it's absolutely unnecessary.
And so I developed this mom support group back last fall, and Kate went up and running, and we go twice a month. We have the mom supporting moms group. And one of the biggest issues I see was that struggle for mothers when they had to choose that I couldn't continue to breastfeed for this reason, or, you know, I just stopped. That emotional feeling of I can't provide the way.
Failure.
You know, there's frequently that feeling of failure when it's not a failure, it's just life. But
it happens to everybody,
right? It happens frequently. And so the moms groups for some of these women has been huge, just to be able to share those experiences. So,
and it kind of depends on the baby. Mm-hmm. I mean,
you know, every baby is so different. You know, some babies are that easy, perfect baby who just takes off and is like, I'm going to show you how this is done. Mm-hmm. And then you have this baby who it takes a month for them to even figure it out, or they never figure it out. And it's just, that's just them. And that's okay.
And I can actually attest to that. I had a friend who baby number one, holy cow, you know, wanted to eat all the time. Baby number two, she just had a really tough time. Because, mm-hmm. and by that point, she knew, you know, I can do this. What's your problem, little guy? You know, kind of that situation. What are some other challenges that you've seen or heard these moms bring to you after the after birth is?
I mean, there's just so many different challenges. You know, is it, you know, a lack of support? You know, the postpartum group we run, you know, I see teen moms who feel very young and isolated, you know, single moms who are new to the area, even, you know, adult moms who are married and well connected and all of these things, but maybe everything went wrong in their delivery and they're still recovering from that experience too.
Yeah.
Maybe they just have the postpartum depression and they're just sad. And trying to reach out.
Or just trying to connect with people or similar experiences.
You know, some feel isolated. You know, you're alone with this baby all day, especially if you're a stay-at-home mom. And sometimes that can be very overwhelming.
Because there are the situations where you're the first one in the friend group, right, had the baby. And now all your buddies are still going out and they're still having fun on weekends. And for you, that's just not a reality anymore. I'm not saying you gotta, you know, ditch the friends, but life changes, and maybe finding someone who's in the same situation as you, that has never not been a great idea.
Yeah,
and so when does this group meet?
So it's the first and third Tuesday of every month at the primary care clinic. It's at 5:30 for an hour. We have a clinical psychologist, Stephanie Stacy, who comes, and she's a first-time mom herself and helps run it, and it's been great.
That's fantastic. A lot of networking going on. You know what? In situations like that, all the kids are going to end up being about the same age, too. So you got babysitters. Yeah. You got people that you're going to see all through life. They're all going to be on the same team. They're all going to be in the same grade. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, these are the people who you're going to be running around with for the next couple of years. And, Jazz, before I let you ladies go, tell me again the classes that you teach and the times that you meet.
Sure. So the hospital offers two sets of what we call prenatal classes. On the first Monday of every month, two of our women's health nurses teach the labor and delivery piece of it. And so what does labor and delivery look like? What is an epidural? What birthing, options do we have at the hospital? Down to when should I come in? What is a contraction? What is your cervix? You name it. They go through all of that stuff. And then on the third Monday of every month, myself and Danielle, my cohort, teach the breastfeeding, lactation, and newborn piece of class. And so that goes through what is lactation, down to, good breastfeeding techniques, barriers, challenges, the do's and don'ts, I guess, if you will, down to what we have to do to get you discharged from the hospital and on your way to transitioning home with a newborn. And then any question in between there. So again, it's on the first Monday of every month and the third Monday of every month. And you can find the classes online or you can just show up.
Now, if there's a new mom out there, she's feeling pretty down in the dumps. Mm-hmm. Like it's endless. Mm-hmm. What would you tell her right now?
I would tell her she's not alone. And we would try to find her any supports we can.
I would tell her she's normal.
Just tell her she's normal.
I feel like at any point in time that any mom, any human truthfully is going to experience those times in their life when they feel entirely alone and isolated. And I would agree with Dr. Denny, you're not alone and it's very normal. And being normal, quote, normal, is obviously individualized to the individual, but there is no shame in admitting that you need or want help in any realm of life.
So. Ladies, I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedules be here with me today. It was absolutely fantastic.
Thanks.
Pleasure to see you again, Doc.
Thank you.
All right. You've been listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE, 103.9 FM. Sheridan.